This BizNews briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move from business as usual to Investec Business Banking.
It's Monday, the 5th of May. This is your BizNews briefing. I'm Bronwyn Nielsen. The GNU is under extreme time pressure to deliver growth and jobs. Alec Hogg recently spoke to Dr. Franz Cronier, who says the GNU must make investor confidence a priority in order to boost fixed investment in South Africa, which is critical in order to stimulate economic growth and jobs. Let's dip into that conversation.
And if it's unable to get up the rate of growth and therefore jobs to 200,000-400,000 a year, then you must expect that public confidence in the GNU will also deteriorate. Now, 100 days into the GNU, 58% of the public felt that it was performing well, which is a very strong number. It actually split 2-1 in favor of people who thought it was performing well. 200 days in, that figure had fallen by 10 percentage points to 48, which is still very strong. Doesn't mean 52 thought it was performing badly, 48 thought it was performing well, and 20-something thought badly and the rest weren't sure. It's a still strong number. But you can already see the trend there. I think when the GNU started, because the fear of the alternative was so great that it would be the EFF and MK, that there was a sense that as long as it's not, well, as the DA put it, as long as it's not the end of the world.
Doomsday coalition.
As long as it's not doomsday, we've won. And that was right and true. And the GNU was very important because doomsday coalition would have been damaging. But I think the point Corneille makes, which is right, is that once you've evaded doomsday, which has been achieved, Just simply maintaining the status quo is not going to save the country, because the rate of unemployment officially sits just above 30%. You can expand that depending on which group you're talking to amongst, let's say, young black women, you can expand it to over 70%. As long as you maintain that rate of unemployment in an economy that's growing at 1%, you will always run the risk of a future populist destabilization. And hence the GNU objective, having very successfully, I think, evaded the risk of the alternative coalition, now needs to restore growth. And to restore growth, there's an order of things. The first is confidence. Now, after 1994, business confidence rose in unison with consumer confidence. And the latter could rise quite strongly because interest rates had essentially been cut in half in the first decade. And household debt levels were relatively low, certainly a lot lower than they are today. So there was great untapped domestic consumer potential. Neither of those two options exist today. You can't cut rates in half from the present position, and household debt levels are very much higher. So you can't use the domestic consumer economy as your trigger for growth. You need external capital to enter. And then external capital needs to enter to the degree that the rate of fixed investment to GDP increases from the current 15% to 25%. So we're almost doubling the rate of fixed investment. And that means you need to lift investor confidence levels far above what they are at the moment. These things are all measurable. We measure them all the time. The investor confidence is at a rate far below what it was between, let's say, 2000 and 2007 and 2008. And that needs to be the single objective of the GNU.
While on the subject of potential foreign investment, President Ramaphosa, in his recent address marking President Zelensky's visit to South Africa, indicated that he would soon meet with US President Trump to address a number of burning issues between South Africa and the United States.
President Trump and I also agreed to meet soon to address the various other matters regarding our relations between South Africa and the United States. We both spoke about the need to foster good relations between our two countries.
BizNews' Chris Stain spoke to intelligence analyst retired Colonel Chris Wyatt, who had the following advice for Ramaphosa when he does, in fact, sit down with Trump.
If I were President Ramaphosa and I went to Washington, I think I have a good meeting because this is what I do. President Trump, congratulations again on your victory. Very excited for your term. Well, let me ask you this. What can we do to repair this relationship? We want to fix this relationship. We view the United States as one of our most important trading partners and one of our most important partners that helped us over the years with aid, helping us with HIV. What can we do to fix this? We want to fix it. But I don't think President Ramaphosa will go with that approach. That approach will win him a lot of friends and Trump will listen. But if he goes and tries to preach to Trump like the politicians have been doing in South Africa the past several weeks, it's not going to fly.
What would it take to convince Trump to change his attitude towards South Africa?
Oh, that's a good question. And that's maybe the $64,000 question. Who's inside Trump's head? It's not Elon Musk. It's not Joel Pollack. It's not Twitterboss, despite the assertions of a certain media publication in this country. I think what you have to do to change Trump's opinion is just make a deal. All you have to do is read his book, The Art of the Deal. He's all about making deals. That's what Trump, he's transactional. He's always been transactional. If you offer him something, he'll give you something in return. Maybe a gesture of good faith, like getting rid of the ridiculous restrictions on pork imports from the United States that are outrageous and are clearly intended to keep us out of the pork market here. It's not that important to the U.S. economy, but something like that might go a long way. I mean, I think that's very important. Also, he could make the argument that South Africa's car exports to the U.S. really don't harm the U.S. market. These are cars that, you know, wouldn't have been built in America anyway. So how about, you know, we'll give you something so we get rid of that tariff, which is critical. That's going to cost a lot of jobs in South Africa if that 25% tariff is alleviated. So I think that Ramaphosa has to offer something. Now, I think where you're going with this, and if you're not, I know others are going this direction. Does he have to concede something on the race-based laws? Does he have to concede something about Afrikaners? I suspect he'll have to. Trump is not happy. He's angry, and he's right to be angry. South Africa is a signatory of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights.
That full interview is available on BizNews TV on the YouTube platform. Meanwhile, the succession race in the ANC is heating up. 6 months ago, Neil de Beer, leader of the United Independent Movement, said billionaire Patrice Motsepe was firmly in play. In yesterday's Sunday show, de Beer reaffirmed this as speculation mounts that Patrice Motsepe could well be best positioned to take the ANC throne.
Cyril's scenario of buying the presidency in the last presidency, that rumor came out. It's now about money. So I am sitting here gnawing at my teeth and saying, told you so. Here comes a guy who has the money. And ek dink sy sisters en sy familie is getroud met die helfte van die kabinet. So his family is not just friends with the president, friends with the Niels getroud. So you're going to be at that New Year's party. So Chris, enter the room, Patrice Motsepe, billionaire in South Africa, very well entrenched in politics. I am not surprised. He's not a dark horse. He is a known horse, and he's just bolted for the first time to show that he could actually be someone. Don't write him off. So now we've got him, we've got Lesufi, we've got Fikile, genade by ons. We've got Paul Mashatile, who's bolstering his little arms and shapes and getting assassinated every second day with a pellet gun. And then we now have Mr. Patrice Motsepe. So I don't think the last one, though. I think a couple of other. CS Tariq is going to be key update, but still long to go, Chris. We've still got a road to go, but not surprised. What's
just,
that guy?
Just a couple of weeks ago, I was told that Jeff Radebe was considering it too.
Yeah, and I think maybe we'll bring back David de Villiers and Nas Botha's cousin if we could find Pieter Tief's neef. I think they all want to become president. I think there's this, let's become president sickness. You know, I'm all what aangesteek. almal steek almal aan, but you can be a president. So Chris, I think we're going to have 10 or 20 or 30 candidates. Neil de Beer is not going to be one of them, because I'm going to sit behind them and go, nou gaat jy op jou moer kry. But anyway, Chris, let's see what the crystal ball brings. You're going to see funny people coming out of funny places.
Staying with politics, the MKP has won a second ward. Neil de Beer was quick to add in his interview with Chris Steyn that former President Jacob Zuma and his MKP should not, by any stretch of the imagination, be underestimated.
Yes, and let's not forget former President Jacob Zuma, whose MKP has taken another ward from the African National Congress, this time in Mandeni, by 42%, Neil, to the ANC's 27%. So they now have two ward councillors in Ilembe.
Chris, die ding gaan nie weg hier. Yeah, I call him a ding. You know, I don't know, have you ever had a cockroach in your house? They only come out at 1 o'clock in the morning when you are so deeply sleepy, and then you hear this chirp, chirp, and now you got to go find this thing, and you can't find it. And Chris, I don't know if you heard, but this cockroach thing goes chirp, 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 and it actually kills you. I mean, you don't need to torture anybody. Just put in 20 cockroaches, and dan zai etter van a muskiet die. And you know what? People think you moved the thing mis. This Jacob Zuma is a thing that doesn't go away. You know, people are saying, you know, he's at this, but I don't know if you know, they say if a nuclear bomb goes off, the only thing that survives is a cockroach and, you know, probably an EFF parliamentarian. But Chris, they can a blik doom uit spite of die goed half an hour. Chirp, chirp. So MK is resilient. You know, I how many times on a Sunday have I told you, hello, hello, they're coming. Not did they just take a ward in Saldanha in Cape Town. They just won another ward in the KZN Durban. And let me tell you, if this is the trend, if this is going to be the continual flow, I am telling you that you and I, when we said that the biggest onslaught before 2029 will be MK, not waiting for the 2026 elections, maar hulle begin sommer vandag. And Chris, it's not by six. You know, it's not by seven. A friend of told me last night that a rugby team had a score of 106-8. That's not a rugby score, that's a cricket score. So when you look at this, if they are continually winning by the percentages and the margins they are beating, not to talk about the opposition, you know, the DA, the Patriotic Alliance, forget about them. They're not even on the ballot, showy. It's ANC, MK, and MK is beating them by 10-25% margins.
Interestingly, in a similar vein, Dr. Franz Cronier told Alec that there are two people he would take into political battle.
Very capable person, Mr. Zuma. I was in fact saying it at dinner last night for clients that if I had to run a political campaign in SA, I'd take two people with me, Jacob Zuma and Helen Ziller. And that would be a pretty unbeatable combination.
On that note, last week I asked Helen Ziller whether she would consider running for president if the opportunity presented itself.
I'm here to make sure the DA succeeds. If the DA fails, South Africa fails. It's as simple as that. I know I'm obviously not objective about the DA, but the only reason that I've put my whole life into the DA is because I know it's the difference between success or failure for South Africa. And I see my job in South Africa's history as to put the DA into the best possible position to take the next step. I'm sure we'll have a DA president in the not too distant future. It won't be me, but I hope that I will have paved the way for that to happen.
In the world of business banking, the bottom line can often triumph over relationships. At Investec, we value both. Make the move from business as usual to Investec Business Banking. Out of the ordinary.
At SunExchange, we make going solar simple, profitable, and completely risk-free. Join over 100 satisfied South African customers already enjoying the benefits of risk-free solar. Start saving today. Visit sunexchange.com and join the solar revolution.
Warren Buffett has announced that he will retire as chief executive of Berkshire Hathaway at the end of the year. The veteran investor, known as the Oracle of Omaha, told his company's annual meeting he would hand over the reins to Vice Chairman Greg Abel. Mr. Buffett, who built Berkshire Hathaway from a failing textile maker into an investment giant worth $1.16 trillion, that's 870 billion pounds, is arguably the world's most successful investor. Our Bloomberg colleagues have more on the story.
Legendary investor Warren Buffett waited until the final minute of his 60th shareholder meeting to announce his plans to retire, shocking investors, fans, and even his own board. The 94-year-old architect and face of Berkshire Hathaway is ending a historic run, turning what was a failing textile business in the 1960s into a corporate behemoth while delivering a 5.5 million% in gains per share to investors. Taking over the $1.2 trillion giant will be Canadian-born energy executive Greg Abel. He faces plenty of questions over his plans for Berkshire. While chief among them is plans for the almost $350 billion cash pile Buffett has accumulated while largely sitting out the volatility of the past few years. Joining us now from Spokane, Washington, is Todd Finkel, author of Warren Buffett, Investor and Entrepreneur. He's also the Pigott Professor of Entrepreneurship at Gonzaga University. And also joining us from Omaha is Bill Stone, CIO at the Glenview Trust Company. Glenn, good to have you with us. Bill, let's start with you. I'm just wondering, how are you reading the timing of that announcement? You know, I mean, we see its stock at record high prices. Well, it couldn't be a better time for that announcement.
Yeah, and I guess I take it even from last year's meeting that it looked very obvious to me that Greg Abel was running most of the operations day to day at Berkshire. And, you know, Buffett was very happy with that. I think, you know, spending all of his time reading and investing rather than getting involved in the management, which he tends not to do a lot of that or tries to do very little of that as possible. It still shocked me a bit that he handed over the reins to, or is saying he's going to hand over the reins to, the capital allocation, just because I know, or from reading everything, that's what, you know, Warren Buffett loves most of all. But it probably makes most sense for the company. You know, he is 94. We all only have so long. And I actually, as a shareholder, like that there's going to be, you know, some amount of overlap with Todd being, Greg, being in charge of capital allocation.
Todd, why are we even surprised? His 94 is a long time coming.
Well, I was a little bit shocked, but I kind of saw it based on the things that were happening in the meeting that it just didn't make sense. A lot of the questions that were being asked that he was answering were more on personal growth. And he had all these young people asking questions like about life, you know, and what should I do and all that stuff. Now, he's had that before at meetings. I've been to 15 meetings, and usually they're a nice change from what's on the balance sheet, you know. But to me, I've written this book and I've taken tons of students to go visit him and been out to lunch with him 3 times. And my students all say the same thing, that the best thing that they learned from him was how to be a better person.
But Todd, what does it mean for the company?
For the company, you know, Greg's been there for like 26 years, you know, and he is a vice chairman already, and he's just going to take over Warren's position. I think he's going to do a great job. He's been mentored all these years. I haven't heard one negative thing about Greg Abel. Not one negative thing.
But Bill, Greg is 63. Most CEOs are thinking about retiring at that age. And there are expectations that when the stock starts trading today, it will go lower.
Well, I think the one thing you have to know about, you know, certainly a lot of people at Berkshire, and I'd say it stretches to a lot of us investment people, is we hope to never retire. I can, you know, at least that's the way I feel. So you can certainly go on for a long time, right? He's got at least another, you know, 32 years, right? So he has some time. You know, certainly, you know, if the stock might be indicated lower, you know, it certainly adds to some uncertainty. We all knew this day was going to come at some point. Like I said, I think if you're a shareholder, you feel good that it happened before, I'll say it, quote unquote, had to happen. Because really, as I looked at Warren Buffett during that meeting, you know, he's still very sharp. His mind is extremely sharp. He actually looked to me to have more energy this year than he had last year. And I think part of that was, of course, Charlie Munger passing away not long before the meeting last year. So I think that was a little bit of a downer. But for a 94-year-old guy, he seemed, you know, very energetic. Maybe he was also excited to pass along the news in the end. But, you know, I'm optimistic. You know, as long as Greg doesn't try and be Warren Buffett, I think he'll probably do just fine.
Reform UK leader Nigel Farage has declared the end of two-party politics in Britain in a sweeping set of English local election victories. Farage dismantled Labour's northern strongholds and annihilated the Tories in their former heartlands, building a powerful local government base from ground zero. I believe we will win the next election, Farage said on Friday, as Reform UK threatened a populist rising in Britain, similar to those witnessed in the US, France, Italy, and in Germany. In an interview in January, Farage said Reform UK isn't anti-immigration and will never have dealings with far-right campaigner Tommy Robinson, whose release from prison billionaire Elon Musk repeatedly called for this year. My brand of politics is non-sectarian, non-racist, Farage told Bloomberg's Caroline Hipker and William Shaw, adding that he has no problem with migrants who bring high skills, pay taxes, and integrate.
You obviously have differences with Tommy Robinson. Have
no, raised no, no, that no, no, directly? I'm sorry, I won't have that. Fundamental differences. You know, Tommy Robinson has nothing to do with me, has never been anything to do with me, and never will be anything to do with me. My brand of politics is non-sectarian, non-racist. It always has been, and it always will be. And Mr. Robinson can do what the hell he likes, but he'll never have anything to do with my party. I want to be absolutely clear about that.
Also talked about the rise of parties with similar views of, you know, anti-migration parties across Europe.
Who said I'm an anti-migration party?
Well, you did yourself.
No, I didn't. I said the opposite. I said we're pro-control. You asked me about high-skilled people, and I said if they come into Britain, bring high skills, pay taxes and integrate, I've got no problem. You know, our brand of politics, my brand of politics, is different to many of the other European parties. All right? Let's be clear about that. There are similarities, there are crossover points, but there are differences.
That brings us to the end of this BizNews briefing. We'll be back tomorrow with more context, both local and global. Thanks as always for watching.
This BizNews briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move to finance solutions that enable real growth.